Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFARL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Moscow correspondent Matthew Luxmore, joining us from lockdown in the Russian capital. Welcome, Matthew.
Thanks for having me on again, Steve.
All right. Yeah, it's great to have you. Now, the last time you were on the show was almost a month ago. I think it was March 23rd, and Russia's borders were basically closed, but I believe Moscow was not locked down. There were certainly fewer restrictions on movement than there were in some other places and than there are now there. Could you maybe describe what it's like now in terms of the lockdown and restrictive measures?
Yeah, sure. I mean, a month obviously feels like a very long time wherever you are these days. And in Moscow, it certainly transformed people's lives. So late on March 29th, a week after we spoke, Moscow's mayor, Sergei Sobyanin, introduced a partial lockdown of the city effective the following morning, essentially giving Moscovites around 4 hours to adapt to the new realities. Now, under the rules, people can leave home only to shop at the nearest grocery store, throw away trash, walk their dog within a 100-yard radius, or for urgent medical reasons. So unlike in many European countries, outdoor exercise, for instance, is banned. Now, I took a walk through the city on the second day of the lockdown. Reporters can apply for special exemptions.
Okay.
And basically witnessed a ghost town. So once packed pedestrian streets, including the famous Nikolskaya Street, which was the epicenter of the festivities during the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup 2 summers ago, were deserted. And Red Square was empty, save for two police officers and a couple of Central Asian labor migrants who were sanitizing the area. But that changed within a week or so, as Muscovites realized that the police, the active police patrols and the fines that were promised by authorities would actually be few and far between. So you could now spot people reading books or drinking beer on park benches, obviously still far less than used to be the case, but a surprising sight during a pandemic. So really, it's kind of a complicated picture. On one hand, there have been thousands of fines, at least according to media reports. But there's no law enforcement present on every street corner.
Right.
So you can go to the store without being harassed or bothered or stopped by the police. That said, with the pandemic only beginning to really hit Russia now, now with cases rising by several thousand each day, the rules may and probably will toughen. So the city finally unveiled last week a long-promised electronic pass system, which immediately caused long lines of commuters waiting to enter subway stations manned by police officers who check each person's pass, which is obviously not the most effective system. That situation has improved somewhat, but the Moscow government has definitely come under a lot of pressure to prevent such crowds, which is obviously exactly the what the electronic pass system initially at least failed to do.
Right.
So that's the situation currently, and I think it's likely that the things will change again in the weeks to come.
Okay, that's interesting. Very good picture of what's happening there in Moscow. I think it's hard to picture, you know, for me, it's hard to picture Moscow being that empty as you say it was, you know, the first few days. Certainly Prague has been that way, the downtown area, but a lot of people out in parks. Some of the restrictive measures here are going to be loosened pretty soon. So I think we're going to see a change in that direction in some places, but possibly not for now in Russia. Okay, well, the coronavirus pandemic has certainly changed President Vladimir Putin's plans for this week and also for the coming weeks and months, probably. The plan for this week was for Russians to give final approval in a vote Wednesday, the 22nd, for constitutional amendments that would give him the option of seeking to remain president until 2036, meaning running again in 2024 and then 2030 if he decided to do so. But Putin postponed that vote in late March, and last week he announced that the Red Square military parade, marking 75 years since the Nazi Germany's defeat in World War II, will not be held on May 9th, as usual, which is Victory Day, of course. He said it would be held sometime later this year. He definitely vowed that it would be held this year, but gave no date. Matthew, about a week before the postponement, you wrote a story about how Putin's spring of political pageantry was being disrupted and threatened by Russia's COVID-19 crisis, which has worsened considerably in April. Clearly, that was a prescient article. Now that the parade has been postponed, could you tell us a little about what you think all this may mean, I guess, politically and, you know, for the country and for Putin?
Sure. I mean, I'll happily take the credit for being prescient, Steve. But I think many saw the ultimate decision to cancel the parade as pretty much inevitable. So videos surfaced in the week prior to the piece I published showing thousands of Russian conscripts lined up at a training base outside Moscow to rehearse the military parade on Red Square, as they do every year. And those videos caused an uproar on social media and among government critics, you know, like opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who picked these reports up, you know, in his videos, criticizing the government response to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So it was already a very controversial thing. Now, the day before Putin announced his decision to cancel the parade, he received a letter from various war veterans groups in Russia asking him to cancel the event. So in a country which sanctifies its war heroes and where victory in what Russians call the Great Patriotic War is the foundation of the main foundation of national pride, Putin, you know, it was inevitable that Putin would take the cue. So whether or not that order of events or the letter was orchestrated is, of course, debatable, but it certainly followed a pretty natural order of things. Now, it's hard to overestimate the magnitude of the decision politically for the Kremlin. The annual Red Square parade is seen by, you know, spin doctors and people who oversee the Kremlin's political trajectory as you know, a prime opportunity to bolster Putin's support as, you know, a defender of Russia's historical pride at a time when many Russians feel their contribution to defeating Nazi Germany in World War II is belittled abroad. And this is obviously something Putin plays on very actively. There were years of preparation ahead of this year's parade, which was meant to celebrate 75 years since the war's end, so a very important milestone. You know, special committees were formed, which were presided over by Putin himself. Monuments awaited unveiling across the country, and you know, there was even an extravagant military cathedral, which was due to open outside Moscow to much fanfare and triumphalism. Right. All those plans are obviously now delayed, and no one knows for how long. That said, you know, obviously the postponement seems a smart, if not inevitable, move by Putin and his government, you know, considering how the situation is developing in Russia. Russia may only be at the start of this battle with the new coronavirus.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like it was inevitable. I mean, I would venture to guess that the letters from the veterans was orchestrated. It just seems like the kind of thing. I mean, maybe not quite in the same way as Tereshkova's, you know, call for the change in the constitution that would let Putin run again. But it does seem like, I mean, you have a better idea there. But, you know, as you say, the kind of expectation that it would have to be postponed was mounting. And then, you know, you have these letters from veterans. So my guess would be that was orchestrated. I mean, you raise an interesting question or interesting point about you know, this parade being kind of a key moment. I mean, every year, I think, in his sort of image building, and this year, obviously, more so than others. I mean, you wrote in your article about how, you know, some Western leaders not going because of Ukraine and things like that, or hadn't planned to go, but the French President Macron was supposed to be there. So, and it is interesting to think about how I mean, a lot of Putin's his popularity in some ways is based on shows like this. He has his annual press conference, his annual direct line with the people. So I think that's one reason that this coronavirus is presenting a real challenge to Putin and the Kremlin, because it's kind of stripping the landscape of these ceremonial things, which leaves kind of more pressure maybe on Putin and the Kremlin to, you know, to take real action and to indeed, as he would say, I think, you know, defeat the coronavirus and then essentially have a good result. So I do think that puts more political pressure on him, you know, going forward into the coming months, and we'll sort of see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to appear, you know, as a hands-on father of the nation, jet-setting across to every Russian region to manage the situation when there's a pandemic on, and you know, pretty much everything you can do is sit in front of a screen and you know, consult your governors on how they're managing the situation. So definitely for a political system which relies very heavily on, you know, kind of televisual appeal, it's this presents a big challenge for them, and they'll need to, I think, figure out how to play this in some ways.
All right, then of course we'll see. I mean, a lot will depend on you know, what course the coronavirus takes in Russia, and you know, whether I think Moscow Mayor Sobyanin said a few weeks ago that you know, they were in the foothills of the peak, not quite close to the peak yet. So you know, and case numbers are still rising, although I think they fell slightly today from yesterday. But you know, who knows what will happen in the future? So absolutely, it's interesting to, you know, it is a huge challenge, I think. All right. Well, I think we need to wrap it up for today. Matthew, thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for your insights.
Sure. It was a pleasure, Steve. Thanks.
All right. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for the Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward. Thanks for listening.